Welcome to The Mental Breakdown, where we tackle all issues related to mental health, mental illness, parenting, schooling, relationships, and everything in between. While Drs. Bernie and Richard will provide the most up-to-date ideas and perspectives, the information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for medical care. Our goal here at The Mental Breakdown is to provide you with information to help you make your life the best it can be. So without further ado, here's Dr. Bernie and Dr. Richard. Welcome to episode 10 of The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
What an exciting time of year. The weather outside is definitely changing. It's getting warmer, a lot warmer. Some would call it hot, I think, especially here in Central Florida. But more excitingly, of course, we're getting close to the end of the school year. The kids can feel it. The teachers can feel it. I can feel it.
Testing is over everywhere. Kids are back in school.
Yeah. So the deflation has started. Everything's starting to decompress and kids are starting to smile again. And I think everybody's feeling a little bit better.
You know, but there is this consensus that once testing occurs, everybody, both students and teachers, I shouldn't say that that way. Let me put it this way. The nature of schooling seems to change after the high-stakes testing frenzy is over.
Absolutely.
Kids are taking field trips again. They're back in school. They're back getting grades. But the seriousness about school seems to change after the testing frenzy ends. Is that the feeling you have?
Yes. And talking with patients, that's definitely the case.
Is it?
Yeah. They're feeling it. They can feel the relaxation.
Huge sigh of relief.
Yeah. And even parents, I think they can already feel the sand between their toes for vacations that they have planned.
Now we just have to wait for the results. Right?
Yes.
Now everybody waits for the results.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Nobody will want to check the mail over the summer to see when their test scores come back.
Right.
Well, today we are going to talk about something that we have teased for the last couple of weeks. And I tell you, Richard, we've been talking about this a lot over the last couple of weeks in preparation for the podcast. Mm-hmm. And the more that we talk about it, the more what we want to say grows. And so we're going to work really hard today to keep everything concise and hopefully help everything make sense to you guys that are listening. We're going to provide you with some ideas and various perspectives all about the idea of giving students zeros. Now, both Richard and I are educators. Before I went to graduate school, I was a teacher. Richard was a teacher for a while. Actually, you ran a school.
Ran a school for 5 years.
Yeah. Right. So we are very familiar with education, both elementary, middle, and high school. I say both, but all three, elementary, mm-hmm. middle, and high school, and collegiate. We both teach at the undergraduate and graduate level. And so I think that it puts us in a position to really appreciate both sides of the zero debate. Whether you give students zeros or students can earn zeros, or whether or not zeros are even meaningful. So we have a little bit of a script today that is really just to make Richard happy because he likes to have a script and know what we're going to talk about. I'm much more of one to just wing it.
There's another reason for that, but we'll take that issue up some other day.
So today we're going to talk about zeros, and we're going to go through several things. Richard has written a manuscript. It hasn't been published yet, but he's written this wonderful manuscript about giving zeros, and we're going to work through some of the points that he makes in that, and again, hopefully talk about some things that may convince you that zeros may not be very meaningful and may, in fact, not serve any of the purposes that we think that they serve. So, does that sound fair?
Right. Yeah, that's good, because this grade of zero has worked its way into education and into schooling. And when my children were in elementary and middle school, I became more aware of the effect that a zero has on their attitude, their motivation, their performance, and started to get concerned about this grade and began to do some research. In fact, Dr. Burney and I did some of the early research in this area and developed this manuscript originally. And so we'd like to talk to you about that, because everybody assumes that a grade of zero is an okay thing to do. But we want to talk to you about that this morning and see what you think.
Yeah, and you know, as I remember being an early teacher back when I was teaching in my 20s, a long time ago. I was teaching in my 20s, just a few years out of high school. And I was actually teaching high school. And I remember saying those horrible things that teachers say sometimes. And thank goodness I've learned better since then. But, you know, zeros are easy to use in a grade book. They make the math very easy to figure out percentages and averages. And they're just easy to add up. Zeros are easy to use. And we use it for a lot of inappropriate reasons. We use it for punishment and all kinds of things. And so we're going to talk about that. And so the first sort of area, the first check mark on our agenda is to talk about why we give zeros to begin with. Why is it that teachers will give students a zero? And I'm using the word give because, well, for some pretty specific reasons that we'll talk about. So one of the reasons that teachers assign a zero is that a student didn't do the work, right?
Didn't do it at all, or didn't finish it?
Didn't finish it.
Okay, turned in something, but it's incomplete.
It's incomplete. And so okay. A teacher, there are many teachers out there who, if you didn't do all of the work, you get a zero.
Right, okay.
What's the problem with that? Why is that an issue? Well, it's an issue for lots of reasons. First of all, obviously, the student did some work. And what happens when we work from the perspective of if you don't finish all of it, you get a zero, the problem is that we don't know why the student didn't finish the work. And I think that since we've become psychologists, that question why has become all that much more important. I want to know why a student didn't finish the work. Was it because they started it, they didn't care about it, and so they just said, whatever, I'm not going to do the rest of it? Or did they start it, but somebody in the family got hurt, and so they spent the evening in the emergency room, and so they didn't get to finish it because they didn't get home until after midnight from the emergency room? Those are two very, very different situations, but yet working from the policy of it's either you did it or you didn't do it, and if you didn't finish all of it, you get a zero. Working from that perspective puts both of those students in the same category, which obviously doesn't do anything to help the student, doesn't do anything to address the problem, but it is a policy that is commonly seen. Another reason for assigning a zero is that the student didn't turn in the work, right? They didn't do it at all.
Or it could be late. Could be work that's late or not turned in at all.
Right.
All right.
Okay. So if it's due today, by the end of the day, by the end of the school day, and the student didn't turn it in, and they maybe even comes to the teacher and say, hey, I didn't get it done. Can I turn it in tomorrow, or can I turn it in this evening online? Would that suffice? Would that work? Many teachers say no. So what is the problem with that? What is the problem with giving a zero when a student doesn't turn in work at all? And it goes back to some of the same issues as before. It doesn't tell us why. Again, why did the student not get the work done? Why are they asking for an extension? Why is it that they need to have a few extra hours to get the work completed? These why questions are critical for us as educators to know what is happening with the student, what the student actually knows and what they don't know. Because after all, what the work is supposed to do is to evaluate the student's academic skills. And giving zeros for not doing work without asking the question why doesn't tell us anything about the student's academic skills. Would you agree with that?
I would. Yep. So far.
So I'm on track so far.
Well, yes.
All right. So the third reason that we may assign a zero is that the student didn't follow the instructions. They didn't do it the way that it was supposed to do. And I tell you, I have had this experience. Now I can give you a very direct example. One of the graduate classes that I teach is a research course. And as part of that class, what I require my students to do is to write a research proposal. For that research proposal, which we work on throughout the term, is they have to write a three-chapter proposal that includes an introduction, a literature review, and a method section. And they're proposing some type of research study. So the method section is supposed to outline the work that they would propose to do in a research study. Each week, every class session, the syllabus, every piece of material that the students have about this assignment details those three chapters and what I expect to be included in all three of those chapters. It never fails. Let me also add this. Each class session, I offer students the opportunity to stay after to give me their progress, to give me the work that they've been doing so far so I can review it, so I can look at it and make sure that they're staying on track and that they're doing the things that they're supposed to do. So I give them the opportunity throughout the term to check with me to make sure that their work is okay. And of course, this is an opportunity that I remind them of each class session. It never fails. At the end of the term, at least one of the papers that I receive is written in a completely different format than what I expected or what I required of the students. Either the entire thing will just be a literature review, or it will be talking about something that's not even a research proposal, that it's just a research summary of articles that the student read or something like that. And the student turns this in very confident that this was, in fact, what I wanted. Again, knowing that throughout the term, the student never presented their progress to me, never talked to me about their work, despite my reminders and encouragement to do so. And so when the student turns this in, their assignment does not meet my expectations. Now, they clearly worked on it, because it could be 7 or 8 pages of work. If I work from the mentality that some teachers work from, I would give the student a zero. That student did not provide a work sample that was consistent with what I expected, what I was asking him or her to do. But if I give a zero, what I'm telling that student also is that all of that work that you did is meaningless. And the way that I think about things is that that's not really fair. The student, obviously, I can tell from their work that they obviously put a lot of time into it. Now, they didn't understand, they didn't use some of the resources, including me, that they could have used. But do I punish that person with a zero, or do I give them credit for what they did do? And what I tended to do in those kinds of situations is I would say, okay, well, what you have here is a literature review, and that was about a third of the paper. At least a third of the paper that you needed to turn in. You added some other things. And so I end up giving them, they may still end up with a C or a D on the paper, whereas, you know, if what I was expecting was just a literature review, it would be an A paper. I may end up giving them a C or a D because they didn't follow my format, but they are still getting credit that's not going to ruin their score in the class, their grade in the class. So that was a long example, but it's an example of what happens sometimes to students where they work on an assignment, they feel like they are doing it correctly throughout the entire process, but when it comes down to it, they're not. And so as the teacher, then we have the opportunity or we have the responsibility of deciding how we're going to handle that. And a lot of teachers, unfortunately, end up giving zeros in those kinds of situations, which really does nothing. It again tells the student that everything that they did, maybe the hours of work that they did on the assignment, are meaningless and don't count for anything. So poorly executed or inappropriately completed work, again, is not a really good reason for giving a zero. I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking here. Dr. Richard is just sitting there listening to me. He's on the verge of getting a zero from me if he doesn't doesn't straighten up. No?
Yes. I'll take it.
All right. Now, the fourth reason that a student may get a zero on an assignment, really, in my mind, is the only viable reason why a student could get a zero on an assignment, and that is that they did the work and they got everything incorrect. So if you have a math worksheet, you give the math worksheet to the student performs all the math, and everything is wrong, that could earn the student a zero. Of course, the difference between that one and all the other ones that we've talked about is that that is the one situation where we could actually use the word earned. The student earned a zero because everything that they did was incorrect. Now, I still have a problem with a zero because, well, we'll talk about why the number zero is so problematic in just a few minutes. But that is really the only justifiable time when a student could or should, possibly should, receive a zero. The other times are really just situations where the student either doesn't meet some other expectations, but it comes down to behavior.
Okay, before we get in, let me make sure I understand this. So there's four reasons why teachers would give a zero.
Right.
The first one is they didn't complete the assignment.
Correct.
The second one is they turned in the assignment, or they did the assignment, but they didn't turn it in.
Right.
Or they turned it in late.
Right.
Okay. And the third one is the work was not properly done.
Correct.
It's either messy or sloppy or wasn't done according to the instructions.
Right.
And the fourth reason is that the work was inaccurate or incorrect.
Correct.
Okay. So you're saying that of those four, only the fourth one, work that is incorrect, really measures academic performance.
Correct.
That the first three have more to do with the child making a decision or not getting the work done. It's more about behavior,
right,
than about academic performance. So you're making this distinction between a student's behavior, that is not doing the work, versus their inability to do the work.
Absolutely.
So one is academic, one is behavioral.
Right.
Okay, so the first three reasons are behavioral. Only the fourth reason, the child didn't understand how to do the work, is an academic issue.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, let's think about our patients with ADHD.
Right.
How many times have you talked to a elementary or middle school student with ADHD where they will tell you, you know, I did all of my work.
Right.
They spent hours doing an assignment.
Right.
And because they're disorganized, because they don't have good self-monitoring, mm-hmm, and for a lot of other reasons associated with ADHD, they forget to turn it in.
Right.
Actually, the one that we hear most often is, I didn't hear the teacher say to put it in the bin.
Right.
Or I didn't hear the teacher say to turn it in.
Yeah, it's in their backpack.
Right.
They've done the work, it's in their backpack, but they forget to put it in the right place. They
right.
forget to take it out and put it in the proper slot. You know.
Yeah. So would that student deserve a zero? And I think that that's the argument that we're making. That's a behavioral thing. That's
right.
That's a neurocognitive executive function issue. That doesn't have anything to do with, not directly, with how the student performed on the homework assignment.
Right, right. So in other words, the grade reflects the student's behavior, not the student's ability, not the student's academic achievement.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So it sounds like we're moving in a direction of, if we're going to assign grades, the grades should reflect what they know. For example, you give a student an A. A teacher gives a student an A. That teacher is saying, you understand this material and you did the assignment properly. You understand the material. That's
right.
The important thing. If they get a C, you understand some of the material, but not all of the material. But a zero might be that, but it could be that the kid just didn't turn the assignment in.
Right.
Okay, so it's... All right.
It's not informative.
Right.
And it goes back to that question of why.
Okay.
So now I am one who refuses to believe that teachers give zeros just to be mean.
Right.
I don't think teachers are mean people. I mean, they went into this knowing that they're going to work with kids.
Right.
So it can't be that they just hate little people.
Right.
So, Dr. Richard, tell us a little bit about some of the fallacies associated with giving zeros.
Well, I think the main thing is that for us, I think I speak for both of us when I say this, that any grade should simply communicate information. It's a way of communicating that the teacher can communicate with with young kids. We communicate with parents. With older kids, we communicate with colleges. How do we communicate with colleges about how much a particular student knows?
Right.
So first of all, excuse me, a grade is a form of communication. The reason we shouldn't use the zero, the first reason is because it is statistically inaccurate. And when I say statistically inaccurate, am I going in the wrong direction here?
No, you're all right.
Okay. Is that a zero... Let's see. How do we want to do this? This is going to be a complicated issue.
Well, let's think about it this way. Our grades are supposed to communicate. And what do grades communicate to students? It is supposed to communicate to students that either they're doing a good job or they're not doing a very good job. Right? That either they're on target or they need to improve. And what we refer to this in psychological terms is motivation. If you do well, right, you're going to be motivated to do well, continue right to do well. If you perform poorly, the idea, the fallacy is that if I give you a zero, that's going to motivate you to do better next time.
Right. The idea being that grades motivate. If you give a student an A, it motivates that student to do better. If you give them a zero, it motivates them to do better the next time.
Right.
Okay. So the first fallacy is that a zero will motivate a student. I don't think that a zero will motivate a student. In fact, the most highly motivated students in a school are those who are the highest achievers. Take a high school class. The most highly motivated student in any high school class is the valedictorian or the salutatorian. They're the ones who are the most motivated and the ones who are working the hardest. The students who are the least motivated are those who are getting zeros. So rather than thinking of a zero as something that will motivate a student to do better, I think we need to think, just turn that argument around. Students who are underachieving are the least motivated. So if you want to motivate a student, you first of all have to increase their achievement. And you're not going to do that with a zero. So first you get achievement, then you get motivation.
And I think what you're saying is that you can see that in the students at the school.
Right.
You can differentiate those students who are highly motivated and working hard. Those tend right to be your stronger students versus those who are right defeated.
The high achievers are the most motivated.
And I think that this reflects some of that work, that wonderful work by Martin Seligman, mm-hmm, right? Learned helplessness. And that's right what happens to a lot of students who repeatedly are punished with very low grades, grades that, again, I think we could argue as to whether or not they deserve the grades or deserve why the grade was given. And because of that, they learned that, you know what, it doesn't matter if I do it or not because, you know, using some of the words from patients that I've seen, the teacher's going to find a reason to give me a bad grade on it anyways because I forgot to turn it in or because she wanted me to write it in pen and I did it in pencil or I typed it in single space and she wanted double space. I used one font and she wanted Times New Roman or whatever. Those students learn that whatever they're doing is not enough. And so, again, as Seligman has told us, those students begin to function under this learned helplessness. They just know that there's nothing that they can do to make their situation better.
Right. As I tell my students in learning theories, we spend a lot of time talking about motivation because motivation is a huge problem at every school, elementary, middle, and high school. Motivation is a problem. And we don't know how to teach motivation. We don't know how to generate motivation. What teachers can do is teach. And so if you work on it, and I tell my students, if you work on achievement and you increase the student's achievement, that's the best way to increase their motivation. So first you increase achievement, then you get motivation.
And this, of course, leads us into the second fallacy,
right,
which is that giving a low grade is going to change the student's behavior.
Right.
And I think with some of those examples, we demonstrated that that's probably not the case.
That's what research tells us, that grades don't change student behavior. Kids aren't turning in their assignments. They're not doing the work. They're not doing it accurately. Those are not academic considerations. Those are behavioral considerations. And if you want to change behavior, you have to have behavioral interventions, not attach a grade to it.
Absolutely. Now, the third fallacy is one that I find very interesting. And that is that getting a zero prepares a student for real life. Now, we wrote about giving zeros in our newspaper column at The Ledger, theledger.com, last week, and received some pretty interesting comments from folks who wrote in on our Facebook page regarding, and on our blog, debating the issue of giving zeros. And this was one that was very commonly cited, that, look, life is a reward and punish system. If I don't go to work, I don't get paid. Reward, punish. And that giving zeros and punishing students in this way prepares them for real life. And, you know, as I was responding to some of the writers, I really sat back and thought about it. And, Richard, I don't know about you, but I don't see my life as reward, punish.
Nope. I don't either. I don't like the whole concept of saying that I work, therefore I get a paycheck. That's my reward for working. It's not my reward for working.
Right.
It's simply an exchange.
Right.
I'm going to work and you're going to give me money. It's not a reward.
Right. You're being compensated for a service you provide.
Simple compensation. Mm-hmm.
And so let's not confuse reward punish with compensation.
That's
with...
Right.
With this kind of thing. The closest thing that we have to that in the real world setting would be like waiters and waitresses.
Right.
If they do a good job, then we leave them a tip.
Right.
They still get paid.
They still get paid for doing their work. That's correct.
But we reward or punish them with the tip that we give.
Right.
So that's about the closest.
Right.
But the way that I see, quote unquote, real life is more a series of... Again, what we would use in our behavioral terms and psychological terms is a series of stimuli and responses. We are confronted with some type of stimulus, whether it's a homework assignment or it's a task that we have to do at our job, and we choose the way that we're going to respond to it. We respond to it by either doing the work that was assigned to us or meeting the expectations of our employer or whatever that may be. Now, depending on the response that we choose to provide, we're either going to have a positive outcome or a negative outcome. Now, we, as adults, we can choose that, right? We can weigh out. In fact, somebody that works here in the office with us was in a situation not too long ago where she needed to make a decision between what her employer wanted her to do and what she wanted to do for her family. And she, knowing the consequences, made the choice to do what was right for her family. And because of that, she knew the outcome that she would have from her employer. Now, that's not choosing to forego or give up her position at her last job is not a punishment. She made the decision that led down that line. So real life is... stimuli and responses. The problem is, and this I think is something that a lot of people really have a hard time understanding, the problem is that children, students, do not have the choice. I used the example earlier. If I give a student, say a middle school student, an assignment that they have to do tonight, they have to write a paper or they have to do this math assignment, and they get home and something happens and they spend the evening at the emergency room and the student comes back the next day without having that work done, that had nothing to do with this choice that the student made whether or not to do the homework. The student who is homeless, and we know that a surprisingly large percentage of students are homeless, where they don't have a table to sit at to do homework. They don't have a quiet place to go to be able to concentrate on their work, to be able to a quiet place to go read. we know that students, that there are students that don't have that. It's not a choice that the student's making to have that. It is their life circumstances, perhaps the choice of others, that's leading them to those situations. So to say that punishing a child with, or a student with, a zero prepares them for real life is the farthest thing from the truth. It is not at all like real life. There's nothing about real life that equates with that.
Right. And then, you know, there's another issue with this. You know, we have to give zeros because that's the way the real world works. Well, let's say I don't disagree with people who argue that, but let's consider something else. And that is that schools are places that prepare, that are supposed to prepare children for life, for work, for college, for vocation. And by giving a child a zero, we're simply saying, I accept your decision to fail. I accept your decision not to do this assignment. Well, what that means that student is not getting an education. So schools also are places that prepare children for real jobs. And to have real jobs, they have to be able to read and write and calculate. And so that's the second job that schools need to do. So if you're preparing kids for real life, let's give them the education they need to go to college or to get a job. And if we let them just, if we're satisfied with just giving them a zero, then they're not getting the education that we're supposed to be providing either.
Yeah, that fallacy is one that we could talk about
for a long time. Because in the real world, if you fall short, you get an action plan. You know, if you have a job and you're not doing your job correctly, somebody comes in and helps you do it. They don't give you a zero. You get an action plan to do better the next time.
Right. Okay?
So why don't we give kids action plans when we know they're not doing the work accurately or adequately or on time or at all? Why not have an action plan instead of just giving them a zero? So the real world doesn't really work with zeros. The real world works with action plans.
Right, right. Well, let's jump to the fourth fallacy. This is where you were going earlier.
Oh, yes.
This is... You were jumping the gun. You were so eager to get to talking about statistics.
This is the part that I'd like to avoid altogether.
and that is the fallacy that a zero is an accurate grade.
Right.
Now, we are not going to bore you with a lot of statistics here. But what we will say, and hopefully demonstrate, is that a zero, from a numerical, statistical perspective, is meaningless. It's a disproportionately punitive score. Let's briefly talk about how our grading system works. Most teachers work from the perspective of a grading system: A's, B's, C's, D's, and F's. And what we associate with those categories is percentages. And so if we work from, you know, 100% is the best that you can get, 90 to 100% is an A, 80 to 89 is a B, 70 to 79 is a C, 60 to 69 is a D. But when we get to the F, those nice 10 point or so variations in the previous categories jumps from 0 to 59.
Okay, now I have to stop everything right here. So what Dr. Burney just said is this, that an A is 10 points, a B is 10 points, a C is 10 points, and a D is 10 points.
Correct.
But an F is 59 points.
Well, 60 points, counting the zero.
If you count the zero, an F is 60. So if you have a paper and pencil, write that down, because we're going to talk about this huge span of numbers from 0 to 59. Of all five grades, four of them have an interval of 10, but one of them has an interval of 60.
Right.
And that's the that's what's called the interval problem. And we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Right. Because, again, there is no problem. I have no qualm with a student receiving an F. If they didn't do the work, if they didn't meet expectations, they could get an F. However, for that F to be so disproportionately low, what the student has to do to make up for that is incredible. So we've kind of written this out. So let's say this, the first assignment of a 9 weeks, the student gets a zero on it. He didn't turn it in. It wasn't that he didn't know how to do it. He didn't turn it in, and the teacher was strict and says, nope, it was due by 3 o'clock today. You get a zero. With the next assignment, if the student gets a 100% on the next assignment, what is the student's average grade? A 50.
If you were in college and you got an A on one assignment and an F on another assignment, you would get a C. Your average grade would be C. But if you get a 100% and a zero, the average is 50.
Right.
You still get an F.
Which is still an F.
Right.
So even though the 100 is probably more representative of what your actual skills are,
right,
because of that first zero, you still get an F.
Right.
All right. So let's say that there's three assignments. And on the second and third assignment, you get a 100%. So now we have a zero, a 100, and a 100. That means that you've earned 200 out of 300 possible points, percentage points. Your grade now is a D. This goes on, and this student who could get A's on every other assignment, he would have to get an A, a 100%, on the next 9 assignments to get up to an A. So we could have a student who is, nobody would dispute, is an A student, gets hundreds on everything.
Got 100% on 9 assignments.
But that one F, right, that one zero, means that the best grade that they can get out of 10 assignments for the semester is a 90%.
Right.
So that means that on any of those other assignments, if he got anything less than a 100, he would not be able to get an A.
Right. He would fall into the B range.
Right. Mm-hmm. Even if they were 95s.
Right.
Even if they were 98s, it still wouldn't add up. To...
And the reason that happens is because the F grade in this system is worth 60 points instead of 10 points.
Right.
So it takes many more A's to work out and back up to 59 or 60.
Right. So that's one problem, mathematical problem, mm-hmm, with a zero. It is mathematically, it is, again, disproportionately punitive, mm-hmm, and it requires incredible effort and determination to recover.
Right.
And, oh my, you know, who knows what would happen, or, well, we could mathematically figure it out, if there were two zeros, or if there was one, yeah, zero and a 50.
Right.
If the student wasn't able to get the A's, I mean, again, you would have a situation where the student's going to do poorly, really because of just one or two grades.
Right, right.
So that's one major problem. And, again, we don't want to go into too much of the statistical details, but... Let's just leave it with saying that when we work at it from that perspective, from the perspective of weighing an F so significantly with 60 points, we really put a lot of emphasis on a poor grade. Mm. And you know, we'll talk more about this in a few minutes, but you know, if we switch that around and said, okay, from a 61 to a 100 is an A, nobody would, right, think that that was reasonable.
Right.
Well, you can't get a 61 and still have an A.
That's right.
But yet, the reverse is what we're doing every day, and some people are arguing is appropriate.
Right. Yeah, the example I use is if you made a C in this system, instead of having a C be 10 points, let's make it be 60 points. So that would mean that any student who got any grade between 21 and 59 would get a C. And people would say, well, wait a minute, you got a 21 on this assignment, you should be getting an F. No. If you make it 50 points or 60 points, that's the disproportionate effect that a zero is exerting on kids' grades. So it's mathematically an error, and we have to end that mathematical error. You have to recognize that this is an error. It's an erroneous number because there are too many numbers in that category. There are 60 numbers instead of 10, and it creates an artificial grade.
Right, right. Now, the next part of this that we want to talk about, and we've really done or at least attempted to do a job of this as we've been going through, is, all right, so if we know why most teachers give zeros, and we know some of the fallacies associated with those zeros, why should we not be giving a zero? We know that it's mathematically incorrect. But what are some of the other consequences of giving zeros? Now, we talked earlier about Martin Seligman's idea of learned helplessness. Well, what we know is that zeros contribute to dropping out.
Right.
We know that those students who are most likely to drop out are the same students who earn the disproportionate number of zeros.
Right.
Zeros lead to retention. Retention leads to dropout. And it's associated with the number stuff that we were talking about, a lot of other things. But if you earn zeros, unless you are that student who can then make a whole bunch of 100s afterwards, you tend to have a grade that sort of remains on that lower end of the GPA scale.
That's right.
And so you end up with very low GPA, leads to retention, leads to failing classes, leads to you not getting the credits that you need, which leads to dropout.
Mm-hmm. One researcher called it the punishment theory of grading, that if you know that it's going to hurt you, then you have to stop doing it. Well, we're talking about middle school and high school kids. There's a lot of things that they should do that they don't do. They shouldn't drink and drive, but they do. They shouldn't smoke weed, but they do. They should eat a healthy diet, but they don't. They eat pizza and french fries. And so, yeah, there are many things that they should do. But to argue that if you know that it's going to hurt you, you shouldn't do it, is not an argument that I think we should make when a kid's academic career is at stake.
Absolutely. And what that does is that sort of makes it okay that a student can fail.
That's right. That's the second, for me, that's the second argument, that if you just assign a zero, you're accepting that student's decision to fail. And that's not what teachers and parents should be doing. If I say to a student, you didn't do it, you get a zero, and I walk away, then I've stopped teaching. At that point, I'm not offering that student anything. And I've simply said, okay, you decided not to turn the assignment in, so I'm just going to give you a zero. I shouldn't accept that decision on the part of a student who might be 12 or 14 or 16 years old. That's a bad decision to make, and I shouldn't accept that.
Because what is a student going to do in that situation? You're mm-hmm. going to say, you didn't meet my expectations, you get a zero, and that student is going to say, forget you,
right.
whatever, old right. man, I'm not going to listen to you, and he's going to go do what he wants to do. And the likelihood of him doing the next assignment decreases dramatically.
Right, right. And we could have done without the old man part, well, because he looked across the table at me at that point. But you're absolutely right. We just can't do that. We can't say to the student, I will accept your decision to remain incompetent, or I will accept your decision to remain uneducated. I'm your teacher. I will not do that. I cannot do that. I cannot accept this decision. Failure is not an option, and I refuse to allow you to fail.
And so what we do instead is we resist the urge to allow the zero to have an impact on the student where now that's there's right. nobody that's held accountable.
That's right.
Because
that's
right. When you give a zero, you say, well, that's what you got.
That's what the kid earned. That's what he deserved. So he got a zero.
Right. Now, and I kind of alluded to it earlier when we were talking before the show, I was saying that, you know, if I have a student who I give him a math worksheet and he only gets 25% on it, he did all the work and he only got mm-hmm. 25%. Sure, that's a problem for the student, but that's also a problem for me.
That's right.
You know, I feel horrible when I give my students a midterm exam mm-hmm. and the grades are C's, D's, and F's. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My first thought is, what did I miss?
What did I do wrong?
What that's did right. I not teach mm-hmm. them that I needed to teach them?
That's right.
Because I'm holding myself accountable for how the students perform. If I do my job, the students should be able to do their job.
That's right.
And when we just assign zeros to some of these things, there's nobody taking accountability.
That's right. If a zero is seen as the end result of something, and a teacher simply gives a zero, and we say, well, that's what the student deserved, then nobody's accountable for that. You can say, well, the child's accountable for that. No, the adults are accountable. That we know that the child didn't do something, but now it's our responsibility as adults to do something about that. We do it with the student, but it's our responsibility to do something about it. The kid has made a bad decision. We have to come in and right that bad decision.
Right, right. And now the last piece here, and again, we've kind of talked about it already, and that is that a zero doesn't differentiate the question why.
Right.
Why did the student get the zero? Why did the student not do the assignment? Why did they perform poorly? Why did they not meet the expectations that we have for them? And just giving a zero doesn't answer that question. What that requires is a conversation. You sit down with the student and you talk to them. What happened? What's going on? And Richard, I know that you've used the example many times when we've talked about, you know, you have two students who didn't do their homework last night. Mm-hmm. One student didn't do it because she was watching a movie.
Right.
And another student didn't do it because DCF was at her house because she was being abused.
Right.
Those are two very different reasons why a student may not do their homework, but the zero communicates that these students are the same.
That's right. It's an excellent example of mindless discipline where we just say, you didn't turn the assignment in, so you get a zero. But now you have two 10-year-old girls standing in front of you who didn't do their homework. One didn't do it because she was on her iPad and watching movies all night. The other didn't do it because DCF was at her house because they're being sexually abused by mom's boyfriend. There's a huge difference between the two. And does that girl who's got DCF in her house, does she really deserve a zero? I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
Right, right. So we've gone through all of these problems that we see with it. So, Dr. Rich, let's talk about some alternatives. What are some ways that we can fix this problem? Well, the first way is to perhaps resist the urge to rely so much on quantitative means of assessment and look more at qualitative. So instead of giving a student zero for not completing an assignment, you give them an incomplete.
Right.
And you give them the opportunity to do the work, and you know, maybe you take off some points quantitatively mm-hmm. as they go, but you know, you work from the system of, okay, they're incomplete. You know, they do that in early elementary school where they say satisfactory, needs improvement, on grade level, and those mm-hmm. kinds of things. We do that early in elementary school years, though some schools are kind right. of shifting away from that.
Right.
But maybe that's a system that we could use at the higher grades as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can, because the grading system should be informative. To me, grades should communicate information. So the first thing we should do is we should develop a grading system that conveys accurate information. Is it the student didn't do the work? Is it the student doesn't understand the work? Is it the student almost understands it, is just about finished with it? Those are huge differences, and we should acknowledge those. We should build grading systems that inform the stakeholders. The students, the parents, colleges, employers, they're all stakeholders. So we have to provide the stakeholders with accurate information. A zero or no grade, really, no single grade conveys that information.
And I think that another alternative to the grading system, if we want to stay quantitative, is, you know, just shifting and making it more equal. So let's use a situation like, there's an assignment, and a student can earn anywhere from a 0 to 100% on the assignment. Well, if we shifted from giving, you know, a 95% versus a 75% versus a 27%, if we shifted from that and said, well, if the student earned an A on it, which again could be 90 to 100%, they get 4 points for an A,
right.
3 points for a B, 2 points for a C, 1 for a D, and 0 for an F. What happens in that situation is, that 0 to 59 for the F is balanced because now every grade category is equally distributed.
That's right.
And so then at the end of the semester, a student in the teacher's grade book will have a series of 4, 3, 2s, and 1s and 0s that the teacher then averages. And, you know, so if the teacher averages them and the student gets a 3.6, then that's an A,
right?
Because you would round up at 3.5. If they earned a 3.4, then they would get a B.
Right.
And
that would solve the interval problem.
That
would
solve that.
Because now with your system of 4-3-2-1-0, which is what colleges do to do grade point to calculate a grade point average in college, they use 4-3-2-1-0. So that would be a solution for the interval problem.
Right.
Because then the zero, the last grade, has the same value as every other grade.
Right.
So when you average them, you get an accurate average.
Right.
Okay.
So if you get a 0 or a 59, it is compressed into just one single score that is equally different from a D.
Right.
So mm-hmm. So that's another way that maybe we could change our system just a little bit to more accurately represent the student's ability. I mean, it would require some other changes because, of course, in high school, on grade, on report cards and stuff, they get percentages as opposed to grade letters.
Right.
So we'd have to shift some of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But again, colleges typically don't care as much about individual grades, even individual grades on the report card, as they do about GPA.
Right.
And again, as you said, this system works the same as the GPA mm-hmm. system. And so if you just say that for A's you get this number of points and B you get that number of points,
right.
that would resolve that issue, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Another remedy is to make sure, and this is a good one, make sure that we only use grades to represent academic achievement. As we've talked, hopefully we've given you some examples of how oftentimes zeros are given as a behavioral modification tool mm-hmm. as opposed to a representation of the student's actual achievements.
Right.
So if we've found some ways, either by, you know, grading the papers and mm-hmm. making sure that we only give them a grade on what they're able to do, and then find other ways to manage the behavioral of not turning papers in on time or not complying right. with the expectations, find a different way to deal with those issues, then that would be a better system.
That's right. So the grade doesn't reflect he didn't turn the work in. The grade is just, does he understand the work? So we reached this agreement that grades measure academic performance only.
Right.
Okay.
Right. The next one here is one that I think a lot of students would like, and that is the idea of stop grading homework.
Yeah, a lot of parents would like that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This parent would in particular.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, back when we were in school and in the one room schoolhouse that Dr. Marshall grew up in.
And that's not a joke, so we'll talk about that someday, now that my partner here has brought it up yet again.
But back, you know, even when I was in school as well, homework was a way to practice the skills that you're learning in school. It wasn't an independent grade,
right.
So you weren't graded on it. So what would happen is, you know, if something was going on at home and you weren't able to do your homework, you weren't punished, quote unquote, punished for it.
That's
by
right.
getting a poor grade on your homework, you would just have to then make up stuff in time to be prepared for the test, which is what really mattered for your grade. So if we stop grading homework and using homework as a tool for teaching new skills, my goodness, how many times do students come home? And I mean, my son does this in middle school. He comes home and he says, "Oh, I have to do this." And I'll say, "Well, how did the teacher say to do
right.
it?" And he says, "Oh, the teacher didn't say to do it. He said that we need to just use the book and figure out how to do these assignments." That blows my mind, because how many students can't do that? They don't have the parents who are either knowledgeable enough or have the time or opportunity to sit down with their students to actually teach them.
Right. And I think that's the issue, that this is really an unfair advantage. When we talk about advantages, when you grade homework, any student who has educated parents has an enormous and immediate advantage, because that student is going to have parents who monitor their homework, who monitor the accuracy of it, and may even correct it for them so they can turn in each night's homework will be accurately done, so the child gets an A because they have parental support. Not all kids have parental support. Not all kids have parents. Not all kids have homes
yeah.
to go to. And so to grade homework is to set up an immediate disadvantage for children in poverty, because they don't have they don't have access to the resources that children with educated parents have. So this is wrong. You don't put a group of children at a disadvantage by grading their homework.
It reminds me of our talk last week with Thomas about the delusion
yeah.
of equality.
Right.
We assume that all kids have the same access to That's everything, right. and mm-hmm. they just don't. And
no.
and I'm not going to restrict that to students in elementary, middle, and high school. You know, there are collegiate students,
they're college students
who
right.
you know, don't have internet at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they go to school on That's right. on grants or loans, and they
right.
don't have internet at home.
Right. We assume that all students are working with high-speed internet connections and new computers that work very, very fast. That's not the case with everybody.
Right.
There are some places where you can't. You still have to do dial-up.
Right.
I have students who tell me that they only have dial-up where they live.
Right.
They don't have high-speed internet connections.
Right. You
know, immediate disadvantage.
Immediate. And again, when we grade homework in the same way as we would a test, mm-hmm. then we're putting those students at a disadvantage. And that's a problem. And let me throw this in there. There's this article going around about how somebody is saying that we should encourage parents to stop reading to their kids in the evening because it puts those kids at a distinct advantage over those whose parents don't read them.
He said because it puts them at an advantage, not a disadvantage.
Right.
You stop reading to your kids because you're giving them an unfair advantage.
Right, right. And of course, that's ridiculous. I mean, really, we should be encouraging all parents to read to their kids. Right. But those are naturally occurring advantages and things. We shouldn't artificially create a situation that causes disadvantage. And that's the problem.
And that's what we're doing. That's what schools are doing, is they're creating a disadvantage when you grade homework because there are certain kids who have an advantage in getting that homework done. In fact, I've even heard that some parents do their children's homework for them.
Ooh. Yes. We heard that one a lot of times. Well, I've done my share of science fair projects.
Hey, we've all done those science fair projects.
I had a great idea for next year if anybody needs it.
I was at a school the other day. I visited a school the other day, and the science fair projects are all completed at school by the students.
Wow.
Really good idea. I commend that school. I'll mention their name another time.
That's a great idea. And you know, I really like it when schools offer the students the opportunity to have time during the day to do their homework.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
They have an extra period.
Where they have assistance, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. where they have the opportunity there.
Right.
Now, the last option, because we're running late.
And I like this one, too. I like this last option.
And that is, again, it's more mathematical, but instead of using an average, use the median. Now, quick statistical differences. There are three ways to determine the central tendency of a set of data.
Wait a minute. What he really means by that is, I don't know. Let's see what he means by that.
So what that means is that when we figure out an average score, what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at what the scores generally look like. What is the typical score for a student?
For that student. Okay.
And so if you have a student who earns a bunch of A's, you get their average score is going to be an A. Mm-hmm. The problem that we're talking about is if you have a bunch of A's, but then you have 1-0, it pulls that average score down.
Right.
And it does what we call in statistics, it skews the data.
There he goes again.
Yeah, it skews it negatively.
Right.
And so what the median score does is instead of doing an arithmetic problem of figuring out the average, we just add them all up and divide by the number of observations. What you do instead is you put all of the scores in numerical order. So on the left, you would have the zeros. And on the right, you would have the 100s. And you would have all the other numbers in order in between. And then you figure out which score is in the middle. Now, if we think about that student that we were talking about earlier, who, let's say, has a 0 and 9 100s,
mm-hmm.
again, the best score that student's going to get is a 90.
Right.
Well, I don't think anybody would argue that a 90, though it's still an A, a 90 really isn't representative of how that student performed. I mean, the student got hundreds on everything.
Right.
Well, figuring out the median, you would have a 0 followed by 9 100s, because we put them in order,
mm-hmm.
and you would choose the one in the middle. And that would, of course, be a 100.
Right.
So that student's score would be a 100.
Right.
What that does is that sort of decreases the impact of that skewed, the skewed distribution of those scores.
And I can put this in plain English. let's say my daughter has 5 grades, an 85, an 80, a 75, an 80, and a 0. So she has 85, 80, 75, 80, and 0. Her average grade is 64.
If we figured out the average.
If you add those numbers together, add those 5 grades together, and divide by 5, her score is 64. That's a D. But most of her work is in the B range. It's around 80, okay? So if you use the median score, her grade would be an 80, which is a B minus. If you use the average score, it's 64, which is a D. Which do you think, which score is a better description of her performance? Well, it's an 80, because she did that on 4 assignments, got a low grade on 1. So her more typical performance is a B, not a D.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and to figure that out, all we would do is put those scores in order.
Right.
So it'd be 0, 75, 80, 80, 85.
Right.
And we find the one that's in the middle.
And the middle score.
And the middle score is an 80.
Is an 80, right.
So that is a very simple way to use another statistical method of figuring out what is the most typical score, the most likely score that a student would receive on a particular assignment.
Right.
And that really, again, is what the whole grading system is supposed to be
right.
about.
Right.
What is the typical score that a student receives on assignments?
And when we talk about the real world, that's the way the real world works. You know, I used an example one time about being in the Olympics. You know, it's not an average score. It's the most typical score that we use to grade people.
Right, right. And so that would be a very simple way. It doesn't require a whole big shift of anything, any new thinking really of anything else for us to work from that perspective. So, all right, we've gone over. We're over an hour. So any other remaining thoughts?
No, but I'd like to come back to this issue. I'd sure would like to hear from our listeners on this issue, because it really is a problem that we need to solve. There is this tendency out there for people to say, if a student doesn't do her work, she deserves a zero. Nobody deserves a zero for all the reasons we talked about today. And there really are many other alternatives to giving zeros that would be more accurate and that wouldn't hurt students as much as a zero does. So we sure would like to see the end of zeros. There are schools, by the way, that are doing away with zeros, and it's working very, very, very well for everybody.
Yes.
So please let us hear from you. We'd like to continue the discussion, and we'd love to hear your opinions about it.
And as always, there's lots of ways to get in touch with us. We have a Facebook page. Actually, we have several Facebook pages, one for our practice. Our practice is called Psychological Associates of Central Florida. So we have a Facebook page for that. We also have a Facebook page called The Mental Breakdown, where you can leave us messages. We post all kinds of different information, different articles, different things that we're thinking about on that. We have a blog at thementalbreakdown.com, where, again, all of the same information is posted, and you can obviously find our podcasts and everything else there. But also, more importantly, these are still places that you can write to us. We put a lot of these ideas out on through our newspaper article at The Ledger, or theledger.com. It's in the Life section. And we also have a Twitter feed. And that one's under my name. It's at Dr. Bernie. But we put out a lot of information there as well.
Dr. Bernie told me there's an age limit on Twitter, so I don't have one.
Yeah, you have to.
You have to be under a certain age to
You have
tweet.
To know how to use a smartphone. Lastly, we really encourage you, we'd really love for you guys to get on iTunes and rate us. If you think we're doing a good job, that'd be great. If you think we're doing a poor job, we'd love to hear that as well, just so that we can fix things and adjust to make this podcast what you guys like, what you would enjoy to hear, and certainly about topics that are meaningful to you. So
right.
If you have the time, have the opportunity, jump on iTunes and just rate us and write a little message, and we will always thank you for that. So,
love to
else?
Hear from you.
Yes. Yep. So, with that, we will bid you adieu. I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
And we look forward to talking to you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Mental Breakdown. If you want more information, you can check out our website at www.pacflorida.com. The Mental Breakdown is sponsored in part by theledger.com, where you can read our weekly column in the Life section. Our podcasts are available for download on iTunes, and you can follow us on our YouTube channel and Facebook. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to send us messages either through our website or on Facebook. You can send us questions or topics you would like for us to address on future podcasts. Drs. Bernie and Richard are available for workshops, so you can contact us for more information. Thank you for listening, and until next time, stay mentally healthy.